Hello, everybody. My name is Sarah Leiter. I'm 30 years old, and I was born with ocular cutaneous albinism, which means that my eyes have not developed properly, and I have around 660 vision.
So I'll start off at the beginning. When you were a child, did you think that being a doctor was something that was achievable? Did you think it was something that you could go and do? Or did it seem like something that was maybe out of reach?
To be honest, I never considered that it wasn't an option. I was raised by parents who were very much of the opinion of you do whatever you want to do. I learned how to ski, how to ride a bike. I was out and about in the town independently at a fairly young age. Because my parents had always thought, you know, actually, I needed to learn the skills, how to be independent. And no was not an answer. Maybe apart from the driving, but that was just a legal restriction. But apart from that, it was just I was going to do it. Actually, in a way, wanting to be a doctor came from having albinism. I was 11 years old and I was out on a bike ride with the family and we were going through a forested area. And for me, that's a particular challenge because it goes light, dark, and that just means I've got very little vision left just because of the shades. So I got very frustrated and I was very slow and mum and my brother were far ahead and I was there with dad at the back. And I was really frustrated. I said, Dad, you know, why have I got albinism and my brother doesn't? And, you know, instead of dismissing it or instead of just encouraging me, he went into the biology and he was like, okay, and explained what Mendelian inheritance is and what autosomal recessive means. And I just got hooked. I was 11 years old and I was like, this is so fascinating. This is so cool. I completely forgot about all the challenges I was having on this bike ride. But also I suddenly was like, I want to be a doctor because I want to learn more about this. And never really changed my mind, never really considered much of there would be challenges until I was a lot older, really.
So from being 11 years old to becoming a doctor, what was that journey like?
Yeah, so I continued in school and then it came to, you know, choosing A levels and it was obvious, you know, I was going to do maths, chemistry, biology, physics because that's the sort of person I am. And that was really easy. And so, you know, I was in sick form and, you know, started probably having these conversations more seriously and, you know, talking to my tutor, you know, who was like, okay, so you want to do medicine? I was like, yeah. He's like, you know, have you considered your eyesight? And I was like, yeah. But I'm sure I'll find some sort of tools. Like it was always, I'd always had a lot of gadgets, I call them, you know, whether that's the CCTV or the magnifying software on the computer and my monocular, various magnifiers. So I was quite a gadget laden young person. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll find some gadgets and I'll make it work. And he was like, cool. And he was really nice as well. He supported me. We looked at various universities. I got in touch with universities. I hadn't really considered applying to Oxbridge very much. And then I got my AS grades and my tutor was like, so Sarah, Oxford or Cambridge? He was fantastic. So yeah, he said Oxford or Cambridge. And I was like, oh, do you think I'm good enough? And he's like, well, yes. Which one? And I was like, okay, fine. So I looked into it and I decided to apply to Cambridge. I had no conversation with this university actually beforehand. I just applied. And then I got to interview and obviously they had all the academic sides of the interview, but they did also set aside a separate time to discuss my eyesight and to discuss, you know, what were going to be potential issues. And in the end, you know, I think there was probably quite some discussion, but they were like, okay, yeah, come and study medicine and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, one of them was quite honest with me and said, look, we can't guarantee that you will ever work as a doctor in the future, but we can allow you to do this degree. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll take it one step at a time. And then I was, you know, 18 and in medical school.
So when you were in the process of applying for universities and sort of after that, I suppose, when you started working, what did people say to you when you told them that you were a doctor?
I think people who know me were just like, yeah, of course you're a doctor. they didn't really blink an eye at it very much. I think it was more usually the other way around. I'd be in the hospital working on a shift and I'd, you know, be meeting some, you know, working with a new team. And I'd turn up with my special computer and with my gadgets. And, you know, at the end of day one of them would kind of pick up the courage and go, Sarah, why is your screen so large? I'd go, oh, yeah, my eyes aren't that great. And then a week later, somebody would go, so how bad is your eyesight? And I'd be like, well, you know, not great. And eventually we'd get down to the numbers. And that's usually when I get a pretty shocked face back, because they just, I think, you know, being fully sighted medical doctors, they can't imagine what it would be like being visually impaired and doing the same job. But actually, I think about it the other way around. You know, I've never had more eyesight than I do now. You know, I have trained to be a doctor with the level of eyesight I've got. So I've always learned to adapt. You know, standing at the end of the bed to look for a rash is not much use to me, but I just get closer and I chat with the patient. And while I'm chatting, I will look at them in much more detail because I'm already physically closer.
So what's been, would you say, the biggest challenge in your career? It sounds like you just see a challenge and you smash straight through it and that's it, bish, bash, bosh, on to the next thing. But what's been sort of the biggest challenge that you've found in your career?
Some of the challenges have been around attitudes from administrators. I would say it's less so the other doctors. My colleagues have always been amazing. You know, they get to know me. They very quickly realize what things I find challenging, but also what things I'm good at. You know, a lot of medicine is about teamwork. You know, I'm more than happy to have difficult conversations, but I might struggle to, you know, do this procedure. And so actually, you know, you work as a team, you each have things you're good and bad at. So I think my colleagues have always been fine, but on occasion it's been like, I need to take an exam. I go, okay, I want these things. And they go, oh, but we don't have magnification software for this exam. And you go, well, you need to make it happen because I need it. And then that sort of might be a little bit of a battle back and forth. But in the end, you know where I stand legally and I just put my foot down. And, you know, in the end, they've always made it happen. Mm-hmm. But I think that's been a bit of a, you kind of need to be quite determined and need to have resilience there that you don't really, when somebody says, oh, but we don't have that, you can't just go, okay, then I'll find a different solution. It's kind of like you have to actually go, no, this is my right. I am legally entitled to this. You need to make it happen now. So I think you do need to stand up for yourself mm-hmm. in those sort of situations.
Do you think, have you ever felt like society or in work, that there's been barriers for blind and partially sighted women or yourself that perhaps aren't there for blind and partially sighted men?
Probably not, actually. I feel like in some ways being a woman has been an advantage. Okay, this might sound slightly odd, but I think we often expect, you know, like as a society, I think a really simple example is as a young woman, I can link my arm with somebody. I can, you know, whether that's my parents, whether that's some friends, nobody would judge, you know, two women walking down the streets with their arms linked. And most people wouldn't even realize that I might be doing it because it's really crowded and I'm a bit uncomfortable and I can't quite see enough. And that's why I've linked arms. Versus I think if you're a male, showing, it's not necessarily weakness, but needing that arm actually is so, looks so different. You know, if you're a 30-year-old guy and you link arms with another male friend, people will automatically assume that you're gay. And actually that changes societal perceptions of you, which I think can have an impact on the way people treat you. So in that respect, I think sometimes actually having been a visually impaired woman has been easier than being a visually impaired man. But in terms of my career, I don't think it really makes a difference. I think there it's mostly about, you know, personality, about perseverance, about, you know, fighting for what you want, about not saying no, which I think are all character traits I've got independent or like that are not really related to my gender. That is just me and my personality.
So what would be your biggest piece of advice then for a blind or partially sighted woman or anybody who's wanting to do something and feeling like maybe they can't or feeling held back? What would be your one piece of advice for them to just go and, you know, do it?
The main thing is don't be afraid of failure. Like, we have this fear that if something doesn't work out, that is something really horrible. But actually, even the journey towards it, you know, first of all, when you start off, you do not know whether something is going to work or not work. So, you know, the journey is part of the joy and part of the learning curve. You know, going to medical school was amazing. Even if I'd chosen in the end to go into industry or science, medical school in itself was still a fantastic experience. So I think that's how I approach most things in life, is to say, you know, don't be afraid of the end outcome that might not be exactly what you're thinking about right now. But look at the journey towards it. And, you know, if something in the end doesn't work out, you've learned something and you just move on and try something else.
That's great advice, Sarah. And thank you so much for joining us to celebrate International Women's Day here on R&IB Connect Radio.